Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Dr. Quentin Henning. And most of you know Dr. Henning by now. He's been on this show numerous times to talk about Novo and Irving and a couple of other companies that he is advisors to. He's really here today to talk about Irving Resources. And this is really an amazing story. Irving Resources is involved in Japan. They're developing some very unique gold projects, gold deposits over there, similar ones in Japan have been extremely profitable. And these projects that Quentin and Irving Resources are working on are very similar to those. So I am very upbeat, very excited about Irving Resources, and they've had some news since we last talked to Quentin on April 24th about Irving that we want to catch up with him on today. Thanks for joining me again, Dr. Henning.
Thank you, Jay.
You know, I think it's important. Actually, Quentin, I think almost every project you get involved with is somewhat unique. I mean, every project is unique. Don't get me wrong. But it's a magnitude different, I would say. The kind of projects that, I guess you could say that the project that Irving has is not different from what's been used, what's been mined before. But let's focus on Irving today and talk about the business model that Irving Resources has and how it's unique.
Absolutely. Look, that's a key element. You're correct. I do like different or unusual exploration plays. I usually like things that have not been drill tested. You know, things that are truly new and could, you know, provide a new deposit, you know, a future mine for this industry. Okay, in the case of Irving, what we're exploring for is not a deposit unknown to most people. These are epithermal vein deposits. Okay, there's many, many epithermal vein districts around the planet Earth, and there's certainly a large number around the Circumpacific. So basically, we're in the Ring of Fire. As people know, Japan is a volcanic island. And along with volcanism, you get hot springs, you get fluids that are heated by magmas that are at a shallow depth, and those fluids can circulate upwards, and as they do so, they carry gold and silver, you know, and a few other things with them, and precipitate those within veins near surface. All right, so why is that important? Well, Japan is ripe for this type of deposit. You have several very well-known gold mines, either you know, historic or in operation right now. Hishikari, for example, in Kyushu, is probably the single highest grade gold deposit in operation on planet Earth today. They mine these epithermal veins and they ship the ore. This is where it gets interesting. Instead of processing through a conventional mill, they ship the ore to smelters. Okay, a smelter is a place where they basically roast and cook base metal concentrates like copper or lead or zinc concentrates, and they roast them to a point where they remove elements that are combined with the base metals and thus reduce the metal to produce a more pure product. Okay, now as part of that you know, that processing, they need what's called flux. Okay, flux is basically silica. Silica is a mineral. It's basically silicon oxide. And they put it into the furnace, and when they cook the base metal sulfides with the silica, it does a number of things. First of all, it helps retain heat because it's like a blanket. It helps facilitate the actual melting of the material itself. It removes some of the impurities and things like that. But ultimately, that silica actually ends up as part of the molten material inside the furnace. And guess what? Things like gold and silver come out of it. What do? They go into the copper or into the lead or zinc or whatever they're refining, and they drop down to the bottom of the smelter furnace. And then when they take that metal out of the furnace, guess what? The gold and silver come with. Okay, so the gold and silver are effectively produced as a byproduct of smelting. All right, and this is a wonderful thing because that means when you find one of these deposits, you can develop the deposit without having to build conventional mills, without having, you know, the need for tailings disposal and all sorts of things like this. At Hishikari, when you drive up to the mine, you would think it was a widget factory. There's no waste piles, there's no, you know, tailings disposals, nothing. Okay, you drive up, it's a few buildings next to a rice field, and guess what? That's a world-class gold mine in operation. Now, when I saw Hishikari for the first time, I thought, my gosh, what a wonderful thing to have, you know, a mine. And by the way, the costs are commensurate with that, the lack of need to process, right? So you have, you remove a huge amount of capital needed to build a mill. You also reduce the cost of processing dramatically. In fact, smelter flux has a value. The silica itself has a value of, say, $30 to $50 U.S. per ton.
Wow, yeah.
All right, so let's find another Hishikari. Okay, that's what I mean. A deposit that large, that's a tough task. But what I'm getting at is let's go find smelter flux deposits. So that's our business model. We're looking for epithermal veins that are high in silica, ideally suited for smelter flux, particularly in Japan. Okay, because if we operate in Japan, you can mine this stuff, put it on a boat, and ship it very easily anywhere in the country.
So you mine out the gold, the veins that are hosted in silica material, and it's not only the high grade value of the gold and silver that's there, but also the surrounding material. And you don't have to do anything more than just mine it and put it on a boat, ship it to the smelter.
That's correct. So you have to kind of shift gears when you think about this, okay? Around these veins, oftentimes you get silicification. In other words, the fluids that deposited the gold and silver permeate out into the wall rock, and they basically convert the wall rock to silica. So when you mine these things, you're actually diluting it with, we'll call it, silica flux. But, you know, there's also low-grade gold and silver within that disseminated wall rock tube. So it's not like you're taking a huge, incurring a huge loss through mine dilution. You're actually mining a product, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's remarkable.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Quinton, on June 25th, you put out some drill results from your Omuai mine site. It's 100% owned. That's part of your Omu gold project, located in Hokkaido. That's in northern Japan. Now, yes. You were quite excited about that. Can you explain why? You were excited about the results. I just sensed it in talking with you the other day. But can you explain to me and to our listeners why you think this is really a very significant assays that you pulled out of there?
Sure. And it's more to do with what we're seeing in holes 2 and 3 at Omui right now. Okay, so we started drilling at Omui a few weeks ago. We finished hole 1. Hole 1 was meant to offset hole 10 from last year. We saw numerous veins in hole 10. We thought we would see those in hole 1. We did hit a high-grade vein. We are awaiting some assays from deeper in the hole. But in general, what we found is that we drilled down the footwall of the vein system. The vein system's trending more northwest to southeast. Therefore, the hole wasn't positioned quite right. It's one of those things you learn sometimes in exploration.
Sure. Okay? Mm-hmm.
But what's really exciting is holes 2 and 3, which are drilled considerably to the southeast from hole 1, encountered wonderful-looking veins. We have numerous veins in both holes, and most importantly, in hole 3, which is about, 600 or 700 meters southeast from hole 1, there are a number of very wide vein intercepts. Okay, people were saying, oh, my gosh, these are narrow veins. No. Look at the photographs in the news release. We hit some very nice wide veins, 3 meters. There was one intercept that was nearly 18 meters, I believe, with solid vein material. Wow. Okay, so all of a sudden we're talking very large volume of rock. We don't have assays, but visually it's quite exciting to see this. It also means that we're starting to hone in on what could be the more of the core of the system, where we can make we'll call it the discovery hole, the eureka moment. So we're very pleased with what we're seeing. We just laid out 4 more holes to drill in a succession after we're finished with the current hole, number 3. And we're going to drill a shallower one above it. And then we're going to step out to the south or to the east a bit and drill some holes that would be the natural extension to the southeast, angled back. So they'll hopefully cut this vein, newly discovered vein system again and give us a sense of size. We're very excited. The Newmont shareholder that we have working with us, Newmont's a shareholder now, but they're very excited by what we're seeing. We truly think we're onto something.
Hmm. Really fascinating. I guess I'll ask you real quickly if you can just discuss: is there a chance that you'll have more drill rigs on the project anytime soon? Because as one of our listeners suggested this really deserves more than one or two drill rigs.
Anybody that knows me knows that I would put more drill rigs on there in a heartbeat if I could. Now, there's some challenges. Okay, we have a Canadian drill contractor on site. Canadians cannot go and come and go to Japan right now. COVID, okay? Mm-hmm. Big problem. So basically, the drillers who are on site, they agreed with Irving that they would stay there for the duration. And unfortunately, these guys might be there for months, okay? It is just that type of situation. Mm-hmm. But now, the problem is if we bring a new rig in, we can't pull in more drillers out of Canada, okay? So what we're doing right now is we're looking at alternatives within Japan. Mm-hmm. We might have a couple of leads, but it's not going to be a quick fix. I'll warn people because Japan does not have a well-structured exploration industry right now, okay? They have just a handful of drill contractors, and most of them are doing, you know, geotechnical work and stuff like this. But we do have one or two possibilities there. We are looking around at any other drill contractors who might have a drill in Japan. Yes, we're looking at it, but I'm not going to say we have a solution right now. Mm-hmm. As much as I'd love to have two or three or four rigs going, we're not quite there yet. And, you know, that's a problem we face in this new corona land.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, I know you'll do the best you can there, and I know everybody's really excited to see more drills. On June 23rd, you announced that you signed a term sheet for an option to acquire the historic Yamagano mining license. Can you talk about that?
Oh, boy. This one, I've been waiting for a year to talk about this, Jay. It took a while to structure this, okay? First of all, the Yamagano mining lease, so basically the core of this district, it was held by the Shimadzu family. They're like the Rockefellers of Japan, okay? This is a very well-known family. When they go clear back to the Edo period, you know, the Shimadzu backed the emperor, you know, they were samurais and so forth. So, look, this is a very historic moment. Nobody has done a deal on this property. Okay, here we are, little dinky Irving, Akiko Levinson, bless her heart, had tea with these folks and hit it off. Okay, they got a deal done. We also staked the ground immediately adjacent. We now control what is one of the best targets and nearer to Hishikari. It's only a few kilometers southwest of Hishikari. My goodness, for a junior company to pull this off is unbelievable. Now, on the back of that, Jay, the Sumitomo Corporation helped us get that deal done. I won't go into details because we don't have much time. Sumitomo has now come in alongside Newmont as a shareholder. They've announced that we announced the placement on Friday after we got all this news out. They came in as a shareholder. Now we have two gorillas in the room. We got Newmont, we got Sumitomo Corporation, and guess what? Irving is set.
Mm-hmm. And they're both shareholders.
Correct.
And they're also working with you, I guess, technically as well.
Correct. Yes.
Right. Well, this is really exciting, Quentin. And so as the year goes on, then, what should listeners really be focused on?
You know, look in the very short term, look for results from those holes that I just talked about, 2 and 3 at Omui, but also look for the future holes we're going to drill. I think we'll see some very exciting stuff as we hone in on the guts of this thing. As far as other work, we will go back to Omui Center later this year. I think we've also sorted some stuff out down there. Our brains have figured out where to go. Okay, so lots of drilling coming up, albeit with one rig for now. We are looking at doing some more geophysical work if we can get access to or get some people lined up within Japan to undertake it. And then, that would include Yamagano. Look, we'll have some news flow out of Yamagano hopefully later this year as well.
Wow, lots of things to be excited about. I should mention another question that was asked by a listener has to do with probably a question that would be more appropriate for Akiko, the president of the company, Akiko Levinson. Wow, I mean, she is really wonderful, isn't she, in terms of her ability to communicate with the Japanese and get things done. And you and Akiko have worked together in other projects, not just in Japan, elsewhere. But the question has to do with a full listing in the U.S. I mean, the investor is a little bit annoyed because it's difficult to have the same information that the Canadians have. I know this isn't really your cup of tea, but I just mention it, and maybe I'll ask Akiko about that and see what the plans might be for for a more complete listing in the U.S. Because I know we can't see what the bid and the ask is, or the size of the bid and ask, and all that's information that's obviously valuable to traders. Anything else, Quentin? I think that's pretty much covered. Anything else you'd like to conclude with? Because we do have another minute or two.
Look, one of the things about Japan is this. The country is in an interesting position. You know, the population is aging. A lot of people ask me, you know, can you mine in Japan? I would say yes. If you look at the situation we're in Omu, the town welcomes us. Our main office is straight across from the mayor's office, okay? Akiko and the mayor know each other by first name. They love to see us. They love to see us, the prospect that there might be a whole new industry set up within their town. Mining is now welcome. Any discussion around, sensitivities in that regard, pretty much by and large, not an issue at this point. Kyushu even, where we've got Yamagano. Also, I see, the need in Japan. They really want to see some growth, industries that are going to grow. And mining's low-hanging fruit for them. They have a lot of potential. We are one of just a handful of operators in Japan exploring for new deposits. And I think that, I feel quite welcome there. I feel like with open arms. Look at Sumitomo Corporation, one of the biggest companies in Japan. And here they put money in dinky little Irving. My goodness. I mean, that speaks volumes.
Well, it speaks volumes, I think, of their confidence in your work as well as Akiko's connections and her. She is one of the nicest people that I've ever met. I know you know her very well.
Yep.
And very respected. Everybody loves Akiko Levinson, I think. So it's really a great story, and thank you so much, Quentin, for being with us again and explaining this to us. And well, I hope we can have you back on sometime soon when there's some more news. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jay.